Tobias for three, and it's through. Ish all the way to the rack, lays it up. Anthony Tolliver to Ish, drives, lays it up, lays it. Bobs to Andre, gets him a jam. Reggie drives and connects. Andre screen. Reggie from the paint. Jackson inside, half hook, no. Andre follows, yeah. Tobias from distance. He hits it. Reggie for three. And it's through.
It's kind of a game of runs. We got on a run. They, kind of lowered our run a little bit, but we was able to bounce back and just continue to put the ball in the hoop and get some stops when we needed. Overall, it was a good win for us.
A lot of fouls in the game. Not a lot of flow in the game, I think, was a problem. I thought offensively that we played pretty well for most of the night, and I think defensively, second and fourth, we were really good defensively. Did enough to get by. Didn't really like the way we handled the ball, but other than that, I thought we played pretty well.
I would say probably since my first year in Miami, having this many new bodies, and I'm a big cohesiveness and rhythm and camaraderie guy. And this year we had seven new guys to our roster, and different lineups and guys in and out, including myself in the preseason. They're kind of slow track, what we want to do as a unit. I'm not helping Houston fans with CP.
You know, I mean, but
no.
he brings those intangibles.
CP stinks. Tell him I said it.
Anytime you get out physical at the point of attack on both fronts, on the defensive line and in the offensive line, you can expect to get beat, and we got a beating tonight. But this responsibility falls on my shoulders. This isn't on anybody else. This is my job to get the team ready to play and play hard and play physical. And at times we did that, and I thought at other times we were a little flat. You know, we didn't do a great job on offensive extending drives. We were, I don't know what the stats would say, but it seemed to me from my just general impressions that we were awful on third down. And on defense, we didn't get off the field on third down. They were able to extend some drives, but they turned it over a couple times. We weren't able to capitalize on those turnovers and turn them into points. You know, just kind of a snowball on us a little bit, and we got to beat him.
A lot of it has to do with personnel. You know, Malik had a skill. I'm not sure how many opportunities we've had like that this year, but I mean, you can't worry about it. You just got to keep doing what we're doing. Our defensive side of the ball, you know, they do run some pro-style run game like we saw last week, so we went into that correction mode immediately on Sunday. And then that's what we've been working on all week in practice. You know, two very good programs. It is a rivalry in its own mind. It's been a competitive game as long as I can remember, going back to my childhood watching Michigan State versus Ohio State. So this is a lot on the table when we play these guys. I remember that team. I remember that loss. And I remember the way they came back.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know what I don't remember is we listened to Urban Meyer talk about remembering a loss and how people came back. You know what I don't remember? I don't remember the last time I saw a University of Toledo defense not show up for a football game. I don't know the last time I saw a University of Toledo defense give up 400 yards rushing in a football game. And I know it wasn't exactly 400, but you know what I was always taught? If it's over 5, you round up. Well, 393 is well over the 5 and 350, so I'm calling it 400. 7 yards shy of 400. Holy cow, what happened to the Rockets last night? We knew it was not going to be a joke. We knew it was not going to be an easy game or a cakewalk. We talked about that some yesterday against OU, probably the second-best team in the MAC, certainly the most dominant team in the MAC East. And we thought, you know, this is going to be a very, very tough game, but, you know, let's go down to Athens and take care of business. Because, Kush, maybe we'll have to blame you for this a little bit. I don't know.
I know where you're going with this, and I will accept responsibility. I've been feeling it all day.
Yeah, I mean, and of course I say this only mostly kidding, but, that whole jinx thing, because you're talking about, you know, if Toledo can run the table here and take care of OU, at OU, go to the Dwight and win the Battle of I-75 next Wednesday, finish things off against Western Michigan, win the MAC championship game, they could find themselves in a New Year's Day 6 bowl. I mean, this is possible because the other top teams that would be considered, who were you talking about, Central Florida, USF as well, and
mm-hmm.
They're all going to beat up on
yep.
one another at the very end here.
Because they're all in the same league.
Maybe the Rockets could find a way to be that team, and I got to admit, you got me excited. We talked to the commissioner yesterday about it, the de facto commissioner, as we call him, Bill Conley, about it. There was a lot of love and legitimate, thoughts that might be possible, at least that, they controlled their own destiny to some extent to make that happen.
Yep.
And even bringing up the AP poll that you say you put a lot more stock in than the than the coaches poll, which I concur with. You know, they started to give Toledo some points. Where were they, 28?
They had 31 this week.
31. Okay, 31. So, oh, 31 points, you mean?
Yes.
No,
yeah.
Where? Well, okay, so
they're
they
in the others receiving votes,
the
but they had 31.
Others receiving points and votes. Okay,
yes.
Gotcha. You know how far out they were from the 25th team, like in terms of the other teams with points in front of them? How many?
I believe it came out to about 29.
Well, right. That's not bad. How many How many Division I football teams are there? 117 or something stupid?
No, I round up and call it 120 because I can't remember the exact number.
It actually might even be more now for some reason. Some programs moved up. I want to say maybe like 131. I could be wrong. Anyway, 20, that's a great thing. And then, man, and I'm not saying any of this obviously had anything to do with what happened in Athens last night, but boy, oh boy, you know, you just start thinking, you start talking, you start getting excited about certain things for, you know, for the Toledo program. And then, bang, boy, it just came to a crashing halt last night. Now the Rockets are in a very, very different type of situation. Now the Rockets have to concern themselves with making sure that they do win out, making sure that if they end up in a tie with Northern Illinois at the top of the West, they will, of course, still hold that tiebreaker.
Yes, they will.
They beat them head-to-head just last week, in fact. But you can't stumble again,
nope.
You know, if you even want to make it to the MAC championship game, let alone, of course, as we talked about, maybe getting a new New Year's Six Bowl. Now you're back into the, you know, trying to find your way into the Motor City Bowl, right?
I don't, it's not called that anymore, but yeah, that would be one of the possible bowls that they could get into. But yeah, it's a bit bummer thinking of it from that prism that any New Year's Six thing is probably out since they have multiple losses now.
No, probably anymore now, yeah.
But if you're the Rockets, still a ton to play for because they still control their own destiny in the West Division. As you pointed out, they beat Northern Illinois, who they're now tied with, so that's the head-to-head tiebreaker. And if they still are able to get to a MAC title game, which at this point is going to require beating Bowling Green on the road at the Doit, and by the way, kickoff time for the Battle of I-75, that was finally announced this afternoon, 8 o'clock next Wednesday night at the Doit for the Battle of I-75.
We'll give another pair of tickets to that game, by the way, on tomorrow's
Indeed.
Show. On Friday at the end of the week, we'll give you the last pair of those tickets that we have for you.
Indeed, anyway, good call. And then they have to come back to the Glass Bowl on Black Friday, beat Western Michigan. They win those two games. And they're still at least in the MAC title game in a rematch, I'm 95% sure, against those very same Ohio Bobcats. And, you know, for what it's worth, I was the one who was getting ahead of everything, thinking of a possible New Year's Six and all that. But think of it this way. Due to Northern Illinois or some other roadblock every year seemingly in the Rockets' way, if they can make a MAC title game, that'd be the first time they get there since 2004.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because Northern Illinois, or
Western last year, there's always been that roadblock team in the last decade stopping the Rockets from at least getting to a MAC title game.
You know, you don't think about that being the case. You just don't because, you know, the great years that they had, obviously, there with Matt Campbell, who's doing great things, who preceded Jason Candle. He's doing great things now at Iowa State. But that's a very, very good point. I'm just excited about the possibility and, you know, the MAC, you know, they might have had a possibility to go into a New Year's Six Bowl. Probably not likely anymore. And now it's going to be just try to win the Big Ten or the Big Ten. Try to win the MAC championship game, obviously, and get into the best bowl that you can with respect to that affiliate title.
That's essentially the goal from here on in. Yep.
Yeah, that's where it is. MAC bowl ties. Here's what we have. According to collegefootballnews.com, the highest ranked team from, and this is what you talked about, the ACC, Conference USA, MAC, MW, and Sun Belt will play in a New Year's Six Bowl. The MAC doesn't have a true pecking order. The bowl matchups are based on best possible games and geography. So you have the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, in which a MAC team will play against a Mountain West team.
Okay.
The Dollar General Bowl, in which a MAC team will play against a Sun Belt team. The Popeyes Bahamas Bowl, which will be against a Conference USA team. The Raycom Media Camellia Bowl, which will be against another Sun Belt team. And then the Quick Lane Bowl as well, which is conditional if the ACC or the Big Ten can't fill a spot.
And I want to say the Quick Lane Bowl is the one that once upon a time was the Motor City Bowl.
Okay, there you go.
I think that's the one.
So, at any rate, that's just kind of where it is. Really disappointing last night. You really felt, or at least I did, for Jason Candle as he, you know, did the right thing. He owned it all.
Yes, he did.
He owned it all. They weren't ready to play. They were completely outplayed. I won't pretend to know enough about the OU roster to say, you know what, that's what should have happened. OU's better. It's a good team, too. They're 8-2, just like the Rockets are now. This wasn't some upset from a team that was 3-6 going into that game that took down and ruined the Rockets' New Year's Day Bowl chances. This is the second best or one of the two best teams, maybe now proved to be the first best team in the MAC conference, and that's what happens when you get those two teams.
This is one of those situations where you have to tip your cap to a certain degree to the Ohio Bobcats and the MAC's longest tenured coach in Frank Solich, the one-time Nebraska coach from many moons ago, because guys usually leave the MAC when they get some good seasons.
It's a stepping stone job.
Right,
but
Frank Solich has always been operating with the opposite mentality. And, again, to his credit, this is another feather in the cap from Ohio, who there was a 20-year span in the 80s and 90s, Bob, where in early 2000s where Ohio was just horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And to his credit, Frank Solich has turned that into a consistently winning program in this conference now.
No question about it. I have the utmost respect for him. And I think everybody kind of saw that when he left. When he got kind of run essentially out of Nebraska and he went to OU, and people thought, what, he's going to? I thought, and a lot of people did, this is going to be a big, a power shift in the MAC, because he is no joke. He knows how to recruit. He knows how to coach. He's one of the, one of the great builders, I think, that you've got going. And he's certainly done that exactly that way. How many years has he been there now?
Oh, geez. I can't remember. It's at least 10 at this point.
Yeah, I would say that's about right, too. So, there's no question. You give this guy enough time, obviously, he's going to build a very, very solid and strong program, and he has done that at OU. Again, first place in the MAC and on their way to the MAC title game. And who knows? Who knows? Maybe it'll be a rematch. Maybe there will be a rematch. If the Rockets do win out, as you said, Jim, in the their final couple of games against BG.
Actually, this is his 12th year. 2005 was his first year at Ohio.
Wow, has it been that long?
That's crazy.
That's crazy. But you know what? That we could be looking at a MAC conference championship game rematch between the same Bobcats and Rockets coming up in a few weeks, which would be very, very interesting to see indeed. Okay, so other news from last night. How about the Pistons? They just keep on pistoning. Yes, that's a verb now, I guess. 6 out of 7, Kirschland. This is, again, something we talked about yesterday, and we talked to David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com about this, about whether or not this early season success, which is now, by the way, up to 8-3, having won 6 out of their last 7 games, 3 in a row, the only loss being a relatively ugly one to the Lakers, by the way, but that was out west, which is a lot of that is excused, even though it is the Lakers, which is a very, team in some flux right now.
But I find strange about that loss back on that road trip is that was after wins at the Clippers and at Golden State.
Yeah,
and then you drop one to the Lakers.
But that's why it's a reasonable loss.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you go out west, generally speaking, if you can go 500, if you play an even number of games, if you can go 500 or thereabouts on a West Coast trip, you've done well. You've done your job. That's expected. You go out there and beat the Clippers, who were unbeaten at the time, and the defending champion Warriors. You know what? I don't care if you come back with a loss, even an ugly one, in a game in which there might have been just a bit of a letdown, hangover effect. You deserve that. So, wins over the Clips and Warriors, followed by the loss to Lakers.
Yeah.
Just the point being, though, that's their only loss in the last 7 games.
Yep.
Then the Bucks, a playoff team from a year ago, and a team that's on the come, I think. And if you get Eric Bledsoe, which they will soon, it's going to be a very, very interesting team. The Kings is not so much. And then last night, the Pacers, kind of a middling team. But they took them apart. And they did so with some of the same stuff we talked to David Fernandez about yesterday that is going to, I think, in most of our opinions, as we talked about this, that this early season surge by the Pistons is not just an early season surge. What I mean is, and I'm not saying they're going to ride and play at this winning percentage the whole way either, just simply meaning by that this isn't some hot streak that you can just dismiss as good fortune and a hot start. Because of the way they're winning different types of games in different ways. Stan Van Gundy's doing a masterful job, I think, in finding, creating a balanced offense, finding a role or a niche for everybody. As David said yesterday, identifying their roles. Everybody loves it when they know what is expected of them and what the role is. And when you're not being asked to, what do I have to do this time? Do I need to heat up? Do I need to catch fire? Do I need to shoot more? When you know what your job is, and that's all I got to do is take care of me, and everybody else will take care of themselves, and we'll be fine. When you know that, that's the kind of thing that is not attributable to just an early season hot streak. That's the kind of philosophy that if players buy into, and Stan Van Gundy usually has players buying into, his policies and his philosophies, that's the kind of thing that can indeed extend. Now, again, they're 8-3. Do I think they're going to play 727 basketball the entire season? No, I do not. Do I think they're going to win 6 out of every 7 games that they play? No, I do not. But do I think this is just some sort of an aberration, just some sort of a joke, some sort of a, well, you know, it's early November, talk to me in, you know, March and we'll see what happens. I don't think that either. I think this is a team that is built, and the way that it's being coached, it is built for sustainable success. I'm not saying for years to come. I'm saying they can push what they've done through a month of basketball, roughly, not even a month. But what they can do is sustainable for, you know, for the several months of an NBA regular season, and they can really put themselves into the thick of the Eastern Conference playoff chase.
And that last part is the
not
key.
Not the tail end, the thick.
Yes, and I agree with that. And that last part is the key to it, Bob, that this isn't just a little aberration. Yes, I don't think they're going to play 720 or whatever the heck it is basketball going forward, but what we're seeing is more sustainable than it is not. And it's a bunch of reasons for that. They're doing a lot of motion on offense. One of Stan Van Gundy's principles that he's trying to do this year, and right now the guys seem to be buying into it, is to no standing around whatsoever. Everybody's got to be moving. You know, essentially the opposite of you and I as Cavs fans, when we watch everybody standing around watching LeBron do his thing. Stan Van Gundy is having none of that, and the guys are buying into that. They were down 8.
Well, I don't want to say in defense of the Cavs, but, you know, two entirely different things.
True.
Stan Van Gundy can't have that. He can't allow that because they don't have a LeBron on the roster.
Very true, obviously.
They don't have anything close to that. They don't have a Greek Freak on the roster. They don't have a Jimmy Butler on the roster. They don't have anybody that's at that level. So this is the ultimate team of, you know, parts that fit together.
Yes.
Not teams that are carried by a superstar that fill their roles in behind the superstar. It's they all fill their role. Some days, perhaps, as the superstar.
Yep.
Some days, you know what I mean? So it's you know, Stan Van Gundy doesn't have to, like, not allow that. There's just nobody for them to stand around and watch.
Very
true. Who would you stand around and watch if you were on the court with the Pistons starting lineup? Who would you stand around and watch?
That's a good point.
I'm not going to watch Reggie. You know, Andre Drummond, another double-double by that. I mean, none of those guys are the, you know, he'll take over now. They just don't have that.
Yeah, and the only, by the way, speaking of Andre Drummond, the only real downside to how this game played out last night is there was the old Andre Drummond at the line. He went 0 for 7. But
he jinxed that yesterday. So I'll own that one. I asked Fernandez about that, and he was like, you know, just as mesmerized at the rest of us that this guy somehow has taken himself from a 38% career guy at the stripe to a 75% 30 out of 40 start to the season. And we're praising him. We're talking about how simplistic his shot is now. There's not a whole lot of moving parts, so you can't mess it up. It's a lot harder to mess up the form. And we're just, you know, like, yeah, this is a great thing to see. And then bang, 0 for 7, clang, 0 for 7. That's a rough thing.
What it tells me is that it's clearly still a work in progress.
Yeah.
But from a guy like Andre Drummond, given his starting point, of course it was still going to be a work in progress. And for us to start thinking that nights like last night weren't going to happen was probably silly of us.
The key now, though, is for Drummond to know that because this happened, that doesn't mean that's back to the old
Bingo.
Normal now.
Bingo, and he himself said a lot of this was mental for him.
Yeah, that's when, you know, you want to call sports psychologists and say, talk to him. Make him realize this is okay. He doesn't have to come back and go a perfect 9-for-9 next game because he went 0 for 7. He can go, you know, 4 or 5 for 9 next game because you're just not going to go for a season from 38% career to 75% in one season. Chances are, how about 38% becomes maybe on the season, I don't know, 55. How about that? You know, that would be a tremendous accomplishment to go from 38 to around 55.
And for a guy like Drummond, if he goes to 55 for the season, that takes out the Drummond strategy completely.
It does. You know, and then obviously if you keep building on it, and maybe next year you can get up to 65 or something, and who knows. But, yeah, he's not going to go 75%, but it was a great thing to see at the start. And let's just hope that the 7 – 0-for-7 night last night does not mess with him too much.
Absolutely. A couple last things from my standpoint that I'm looking at from this game last night. First of all, great second quarter. I mean, this was, Indiana put 30 up on the board. They were down 8. You're thinking, oh, it might be one of those nights. They outscore them by 15 in that second quarter. And remember, this was a game there was no Stanley Johnson, who had been playing better in the last few games still in the starting lineup, and no John Luehr, one of their more primary guys off the bench. You got 7 OK points out of a spot start from Reggie Bullock, Langston Galloway with 12 off the bench. So I thought they filled in for Luehr and Stanley Johnson, who were out hurt very, very nicely. And that tells me that's another small sign of guys buying into what their roles are, even if their roles change for an individual game.
I think that's very well said, and that's kind of what David was talking about when I asked him what the key to this start is. You know, is it just a hot hand or two? And he said, no, and obviously you look at the stats, we kind of knew that, but what is it? And he said the identification of roles. Stan has let everybody know who they are and where they are and where they stand and what is expected of them. And they are buying in, and that is a great example of it. Flipping over, as long as we're on the NBA, after last night, Cavaliers did not play, but they will play tonight, and they are in Houston, I believe. And it is going to be a very, very, it'll be a TNT nationally televised game. It's going to be a road trip, tough road trip. Houston, Dallas, the Knicks, and Charlotte. What makes it tough is the fact that three of those teams are non-playoff teams, and they have just gotten roasted by non-playoff teams. But LeBron James was asked, and I heard, by the way, a conversation yesterday that I found very interesting, talking about why the Cavaliers are the way they are, playing so poorly for the most part at the start of this season. And the analysis or the opinions on this or whatever is that the LeBron James acquisition, or I'm sorry, the acquisition of a different new point guard to play with LeBron James hasn't started yet. You know, the acquisition of Isaiah Thomas is holding him back and holding them back from what they can be, and that perhaps everybody is pressing a little bit. And this is on a different talk show I heard, a national one. That perhaps everybody is pressing a little bit because of what Kyrie Irving is doing over in Boston. That trade, when that acquisition was made, it was supposed to be one all-star point guard for another all-star point guard. Both of them have similar games. Kyrie probably a little bit better outside, better handles, but both are relentless finishers at the rim, even the 5'9 Isaiah Thomason. And some believe, Jim, that watching Kyrie, who is now after torching Lonzo and the boys from L.A. last night, they're now on a 10-game winning streak and are 10-2, the best record in the NBA, and Kyrie Irving is the driving force for all of it. He is their leading scorer. He is their leading playmaker. He is their face of the franchise now. It's exactly what he wanted when he said he wanted to leave LeBron. And this being so publicly successful for Kyrie is leading the Cavaliers to play a little bit differently because they don't have the guy that Kyrie was traded for, and that some are pressing a little bit, trying to, you know, match the success that the Celtics and the Kyrie are having, especially since they don't have Isaiah yet. And LeBron James was asked, not specifically about that, but what about the impact that not having Isaiah Thomas has had? How much is he going to change things? Maybe how much is he going to save things when he comes back from his injury and becomes LeBron James' new version of Kyrie Irving?
I would say probably since my first year in Miami, I was having this many new bodies. You know, for me, you know, my first year in Miami, obviously, I hadn't played with none of those guys, you know, up until that point. You know, so, and I'm a big cohesiveness and rhythm and, you know, camaraderie guy. And, you know, this year we added 7 new guys to our roster. And, you know, we've had some different lineups, guys in and out, including myself in the preseason. And, you know, it kind of slow track, you know, what we want to do as a unit. You know, so every game is like a high intense opportunity practice for us to try to get better and better versus great competition, no matter who we're playing. So it's been challenging, but I've always kind of fell in love with the process and you know, being very patient and understanding you know, what this season is. And every season is different. I always say that, and this is a different challenge, and it's good to be a part of it. To be honest, I don't think it's too much expected, and I don't think we're
This is in response. This part now is in response to the Isaiah question. When he comes back, what is expected of him? He said not too much.
Relying on IT to come back. We want him to take his time, and when he feels he's ready, then he's going to fit right in. But we can't rely on just one person. We can't rely on just one person anyway for us to be as good as we want to be. No matter if it's IT or myself or Tristan being out, we have guys that have to step up. IT is definitely a big piece of what we want to do, but IT hasn't stepped out on the floor in a Cavs uniform yet. So we know what he's capable of doing, but he hasn't played with us, so we don't want to put that type of pressure on him, even though he loves it.
So no pressure. He doesn't want to put too much pressure on Isaiah Thomas. A lot of that was so hard to hear, and apologies for that. I just want to once again say thank you to every professional basketball media relations director for holding those available player times on the practice court, where basketballs are bouncing and players are yelling, and it's just impossible to get broadcast audio, a quality audio from them. So thank you so much to every single one of these. There's a word I would use here that Andrew Dice Clay once popularized, but I'm not going to because I don't want to threaten the license of the radio station. All right, it's 3:34. Kush, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day has to do with that Rocket meltdown last night in Athens. Rockets suffered their second overall loss, first MAC loss of the year in that 38-10 beatdown. The lack of a rushing defense was the problem. 393 yards on the ground. That's what OU did to the front seven of the Toledo defense. Simply unacceptable. I am certain that Jason Candle feels that way, although he won't throw the players under the bus for it. He is taking responsibility for that himself. His guys were not ready to play, and they certainly could not stop the Bobcat running back. So that 393 yards on the ground for OU is our Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Snow flurries are supposed to start very, very soon. Karst Area 1 wants you to be ready for the cold weather this year. You want to know how you do it? You stay out of it. Don't stand out in the cold weather scraping the ice off your windshield or brushing the snow off your car. You know what you do? You get yourself a remote car starter using your smartphone from Karst Area 1. And then you're nice and toasty in the building, wherever you might be, or your house. You start the car, you get those defrosters going, you get it nice and warm and toasty, and everything is ready for you without you standing out in the cold. That's what Steve and the staff want to do for you. That remote car starter using your smartphone can be installed for just $195. That's right. Total fee involved for the starter and installation is $195. You could wait until it's the dead of winter and then go say, hey, I want a remote car starter, and they're going to say, okay, $300. Wait, what? Yeah. It's $300 if you wait. It's $195 installed if you do it now. Go see Steve in Karst Area 1 on Central, a block east of Secor. If you need directions, go to KarstArea1.com. Turtle. All right, we got a bottom of the hour sports center, local sports center coming your way. We got a lot of other things to talk about. It's a very, very manic Thursday, if you will, because I still cannot get enough of the college football weekend to come, and we're going to touch on that as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling right along are we on the extravaganza. Coming up at 4:10, we are going to do a little bit more college football talk with Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Try to get Paul's thoughts now that we've had a few days to digest and reflect on the beatdown at Iowa, the unexpected, in fact, just completely shocking to most of us, beatdown that JT Barrett and the boys took at Iowa. I don't know why I should do that. It's not fair to JT. He's one play. He's the quarterback, so he's the most important player. But I should say Urban Meyer and the boys. He's the coach. It's his job. Like Jason Candle said about their beatdown at OU last night, that's on him. It's on Urban. JT didn't play well, but he is still just the quarterback of the college team. Anyway, we're going to talk to Paul Keels about the beat down there, and then, of course, look ahead to the showdown with Michigan State. Suddenly, this game is a lot tougher than it looked a few weeks ago. Sparty is a lot better than people thought they were a few weeks ago. Quite honestly, Jim, to be real, Michigan's 14-10 loss to Sparty doesn't look as bad as it did at the time that it happened.
I think most people
thought that Sparty was, I don't want to say a down year, but wasn't going to be one of the top two or three teams in the Big Ten. Weren't going to be one of the top two, two or three teams, particularly, you know, in the Big Ten East. I feel like this kind of crept up on everybody, maybe even Mike D'Antonio.
Yeah.
Or Mark D'Antonio, I beg your pardon.
I think you got a good point there. I mean, the fact that after everything that's happened, that this is the de facto East Division title game for the Big Ten is interesting in and of itself. I mean, just because of Michigan State being the other, a lot, myself included, did not expect that much from them. I wouldn't have called it a down year. I would have said I expected it to be more of a transition year. And when you're a power conference team like a Michigan State, transition year usually means like 7-5 or something like that. That's kind of what I was expecting Sparty to be this year. But they're a little bit better than that, as evidenced by not just the Michigan game you were referring to, but by beating Penn State right after Ohio State beat them. That's why, after everything, Penn State's probably the one that's on the outside looking in on all this, because they lose out on a tiebreaker to both the Buckeyes and the Spartans.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this game, you know, means a whole heck of a lot more now. Like you said, it's the de facto Big Ten East championship, and it really has a very serious impact on the playoffs. Probably not for Ohio State. I think Ohio State's chances are done.
Agreed.
I think a two-loss Ohio State team compared to a bunch of other two-loss teams, when you look at the losses, one, a blowout loss at home to Oklahoma, and then a blowout loss even bigger on the road at the time unranked Iowa, I think they're done. No committee is going to look at that and say, yeah, come on in, even if they win the Big Ten championship. But Michigan State, on the other hand, has an opportunity there. This is indeed, you know, one of the Big Ten's really two only hopes for having a participant in the playoff. The first one being, of course, as I mentioned, or as we have mentioned, you know, Wisconsin going unbeaten the whole way through. If they go undefeated, if Wisconsin goes undefeated, then clearly, and wins the Big Ten championship, even despite their soft schedule, they're going to get in. But if they don't, Sparty is really the next best chance there. And people look at Michigan State's record and say their two losses, all right, what about them and what are their quality wins? Well, Michigan at the time was ranked number 7 when they beat them. And if Michigan keeps coming back and surging, which perhaps they'll be doing here, going at least to the Ohio State game, they'll be a ranked team at the end of the season as well, which will look good. The win over number 7 at the time, they beat the number 7 team at the time they played them twice now with Michigan and Penn State.
Yeah, that's true.
Add a victory over 13 Ohio State. And then, you know, the season-ending garbage of Maryland and Rutgers, which should be no problem for Sparty, and win a Big Ten championship, they're going to have a legitimate case to say, hey, put us into this playoff.
Yeah.
Which I don't think, even Mark D'Antonio, like I said, I doubt very seriously at the beginning of the year he ever had any such thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that that could even possibly happen is a tip of the cap to D'Antoni and to what he's still doing up there in East Lansing, that he has this Michigan State team even possibly can entertain that kind of idea, because again, I thought this was going to be more of a transition kind of year for him.
So did I.
And
that's a good way to say it, by the way, because I didn't want to say down.
Yeah.
But that's a better way to say it. They're transitioning. I think that's fair to say. That's a little bit.
There's a difference. Like, for example, Florida State, now that's a down year, not a transition year. That's a flat out down year, though, where there's an injury to it. This is more of transition as opposed to a down year, because if you're still in line for your conference's division title and spot in their title game, that can't really be a down year exactly.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So huge games, by the way. That 12-13 matchup is only one of the incredible games. We talked about this at some length yesterday with the de facto commish, Bill Conley. And if you look at the top 25 matchups, a lot of what the college football playoff rankings looked like on Tuesday night are going to sort themselves out. A lot of, questions and controversy, as you can always expect that there will be. But Notre Dame or Miami, one of them is still going to be in the hunt for the Final Four playoff teams. The other one will be knocked out down in Coral Gables at 8 p.m. prime time on Saturday. The Irish at the Hurricanes. You are probably going to have a determination made on who the Big 12's best chance is going to be, because you have Oklahoma with that high-flying, top-rated offense against one of the most stingy defenses. Another prime-time 8 o'clock game, by the way, with 6 TCU at 5 Oklahoma. That is going to be something to behold. Alabama isn't quite the same matchup, number 2 in the CFP rankings, but they do have a top 16 team in 16th rated Mississippi State, so that'll be interesting to see. And I'm just running down the rated versus rated, ranked versus ranked teams this particular weekend. Iowa, as mentioned, is now 20th. They surge into the rankings with that beatdown of the Buckeyes, and now they got another tough road to hoe here in the number 8th rated undefeated Wisconsin Badgers. That went in Madison, so that's a big deal. And it will be clearly Wisconsin's biggest win to date, if indeed they are able to pull that off. Number 1, Georgia, and number 10, Auburn. Again, according to the rankings, that is an SEC showdown also with playoff implications. If Georgia can stay undefeated and win this thing out, they will play undefeated Alabama in all likelihood. If they stay that way, they have Auburn as well later in the SEC championship game, where the winner goes into the playoffs and the loser may also go into the playoffs, depending on how close that game is and depending on what the other one lost teams look like. So, and Auburn, you know, it's funny, we just laid out the case or the roadway or the path, Jim, for Sparty and Mark D'Antonio to get his guys into the playoff with two losses. Auburn's is similar. You know, win the gauntlet that includes Georgia and Alabama and then Georgia again in the SEC championship game, and Auburn is going to make a very, very strong case for being in that playoff with two losses as well.
Yeah,
did I miss any other top 25 games against top 25 teams? I think I got them all.
I think that was all of them. And you know, the other thing on Auburn.
Well, Okie State and Iowa State is 15 against 21, but they're a little bit, you know, they're down there. And after Okie State lost to Oklahoma, that kind of put the kibosh on their plans. Go ahead.
And the thing about the Auburn thing, yeah, you know, I'm looking at their schedule right now. Yeah, if they're able to somehow pull off what would have to be two wins against Georgia and one win against Alabama, yeah, that's easily the best two-loss team then, in my opinion, in the nation. Their two losses would have been way back in early September at Clemson. That's kind of totally understandable.
Absolutely. And Clemson's one of the best two or three teams in the country.
Exactly. They're in that top four right now. And the other loss was on the road by 4 points at LSU. They were unranked at the time, and they're just okay this year, but that was still a road game at LSU. In other words, their two losses are somewhat acceptable and would be certainly outweighed by just two wins against Georgia and one against Alabama if it goes that way. So there's another thing that would be working against, say, an Ohio State or somebody. They blatantly would not even be the best two-loss team in that scenario.
Yeah, exactly right. That I completely concur with that. And going back to the original back to the Big Ten question, that is, and when he kind of laid it out how Sparty could get there. The Wisconsin one is easier, just win out, although that's not easy. Winning out, just asking them to win out with what they have left, especially now that Iowa's there, and then they would have to beat a Big Ten East champion.
And Michigan's still on that schedule. They may not be ranked, but Michigan is still on that schedule, too.
That's true. And Michigan is, well, actually, they are ranked now, are they not?
No, Michigan is not ranked in the playoff.
Not in the CFP, but they have worked their way back into the poll ranking. So, yes.
Yes, they are 21 in the AP.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that clarification. Yes. So, Michigan found their way back 21 in the AP, and I think they're in about the same position. No, 22 in the coaches' poll.
Yeah, they're just not in the playoff ranking.
So, yes, that could still be a threat, especially the way they have been running the ball, which they haven't had a whole lot of choice because John O'Korn could not get it done through the air. He's now been replaced by Brandon Peters, the one, you know, really, really extraordinarily talented young freshman, redshirt freshman, I believe. And, you know, he only threw for 56 yards in their win over Minnesota, but they won 33-10 handily because of a tremendous defense and because of a running game that put up nearly, 350 yards, I think it was, on the ground, 200 from Higdon. So anyway, you're right. That's a challenge. Wisconsin would have to do that. And hold on, let me just take a quick look at the rest of their – they got Iowa this week, which is now a ranked team, Michigan next week, which is a ranked team at the moment. Who's Michigan have again? Michigan has
at Maryland on Maryland, this so Saturday. They should win, but I don't know if that's going to be enough to get them to 24-25 in the playoff.
Right. And then Minnesota to wrap it up, which we just saw against Michigan get beat down pretty easily.
And then you're going to get the winner of Ohio State at this rate, Ohio State, Michigan State. This one.
And that's the key. So Wisconsin, and there was a really interesting piece. I bring them up again because of a very interesting piece that I read today. From the Big Lead, which is part of USA Today Sports. If 13-0 Wisconsin misses the college football playoff, the system is a complete failure. I cannot disagree. I might not have, you know, felt that same way 2-3 weeks ago, looking at the Wisconsin schedule and looking at some of the meat grinders that the other teams that are playing have done. I might take a one-loss team. a lot of times you look at it Vegas style. You know, would a one-loss team against an undefeated Wisconsin team be favored in a neutral field? And if they are, to me, then that's the better team, and that's the team that ought to be in the playoff, even if they have one loss. Yes, I want somebody to go undefeated. Yes, I think that should be rewarded. But no, I don't think you should be rewarded if you play a bunch of cupcakes. And I think a team that challenges itself with a really, really daunting, like Notre Dame, for example, which has played a ton of very tough teams and a lot of tough circumstances, highly ranked teams. For me, a one-loss Notre Dame team would certainly have to be in that top four against a 13-0 Wisconsin team at least a couple of weeks ago. But now that Iowa happened to Ohio State, and they're on the schedule this week for the Badgers, now that Michigan is coming back from their blowout loss to Penn State and are looking solid again, that would be a very quality win for Wisconsin. And if they then add to that a Big Ten championship game win against Sparty or Ohio State, then I would say, okay, all sins of a soft schedule are forgiven here. You're unbeaten, and you won the Big Ten championship game against one of those two teams. Yes, Big Ten champion Wisconsin, you are in.
And I see where you're going with kind of this, and it makes me have to say I'm rooting for that possibility. By that I mean no Wisconsin despite being undefeated. I'm rooting for that because, of course, you know, Bob, I'm a big proponent of expand this to 8. And controversies like this.
Well, so you're saying you want them to stay undefeated and not get in?
Not get in because only on the grounds that it'll help the arguments of expand the playoffs. Here's something else to
keep in
mind as we go forward, too, that will definitely be used if this holds in this offseason as another example of we should be expanding this to 8. Just look at it right now. We've kind of talked about the Georgia-Alabama part, right? If both teams kind of hold serve, face each other in the title game, that the loser is probably dropping but not out of the playoff, right? We kind of agree that's possible.
Assuming it's a very closely fought loss.
Right.
If Alabama beats Georgia by 17 or Georgia beats Alabama by 17, loser doesn't stay in that top four. But if it's a field goal game, then I think, yes, they very, very likely could. And that depends, Jim, on how each of them look against Auburn
in
their games, which is another top 10 team. And even though it's at 10, if they both have impressive wins over Auburn and are really, really, again, continuing to be that highly rated by the committee, and then it's only a field goal difference between the two of them, then yes, that's a caveat to your question. Yes, then we would be saying I think both of them would stay in.
And kind of where I'm going with this, and I guess it's okay that they're 1-2 right now, but here's another way to help that argument that we want of 8 teams going forward. Say it did stop right now, and maybe you just rearranged where Georgia and Alabama are. Then you'd have a playoff of 2 SEC, independent Notre Dame, and an ACC team. Or said another way, 3 of the 5 power conferences, a majority, shut out of the playoff. You don't think that's going to get people griping this offseason?
That's a good point, too. Yeah,
so
I don't think that's
going to
happen the way that it is now. I don't think that will be how it plays out. But, yes, you would have people screaming, how can Notre Dame? They didn't have a conference championship game. They're not even in a conference.
Tobias for 3, and it's through. Ish all the way to the rack, lays it up. Anthony Calvert to Ish, drives, lays it up, lays it. Up to Andre, gets him a jam. Reggie drives and connects. Andre screen. Reggie from the paint. Jackson inside, half hook, no. Andre follows, Tobias from distance. He hits it. Reggie for 3. And it's through.
It's kind of a game of runs. We got on a run. They, kind of lowered our run a little bit, but we was able to bounce back and just continue to put the ball in the hoop and get some stops when we need it. Overall, it was a good win for us.
A lot of fouls in the game. Not a lot of flow in the game, I think, was a problem. I thought offensively that we played pretty well for most of the night, and I think defensively, second and fourth, we were really good defensively. Did enough to get by. Didn't really like the way we handled the ball, but other than that, I thought we played pretty well.
I would say probably since my first year in Miami, having this many new bodies, and I'm a big cohesiveness and rhythm and camaraderie guy. And this year we added 7 new guys to our roster, and different lineups and guys in and out, including myself in the preseason. They're kind of slow track, what we want to do as a unit. I'm not helping Houston fans with CP.
Yeah, he brings those intangibles.
CP stinks. Tell him I said it.
mean, anytime you get out physical at the point of attack on both fronts, on the defensive line and the offensive line, you can expect to get beat, and we got a beating tonight. But this responsibility falls on my shoulders. This isn't on anybody else. This is my job to get the team ready to play and play hard and play physical. And at times we did that, and I thought at other times we were a little flat. You know, we didn't do a great job on offensive extending drives. We were, I don't know what the stats would say, but it seemed to me from my just general impressions that we were awful on third down. And on defense, we didn't get off the field on third down. They were able to extend some drives, and they turned it over a couple times. We weren't able to capitalize on those turnovers and turn them into points. You know, just kind of a snowball on us a little bit, and we got to beat him.
A lot of it has to do with personnel. You know, Malik had a skill, and I'm not sure how many opportunities we've had like that this year. But, I mean, you can't worry about it. You just got to keep doing what we're doing. Our defensive side of the ball, you know, they do run some pro-style run game like we saw last week. So we went into that correction mode immediately on Sunday. And then that's what we've been working on all week in practice. You know, two very good programs. It is a rivalry in its own mind. It's been a competitive game as long as I can remember, going back to my childhood watching Michigan State versus Ohio State. So this is a lot on the table when we play these guys. I remember that team. I remember that loss. And I remember the way they came back.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Meyer remembers that team. He remembers that loss. He remembers the way they came back. The question is, do the Buckeyes have the ability to forget last week? Do they have the ability to forget a blowout loss at the hands of Iowa, as shocking as pretty much anything we've seen this season, really, in the top 25 in college football, Big Ten or otherwise? Welcome as we continue now, 12 minutes after 4. Hour number 2 of the Extravaganza. Want to get right back into the college football conversation with Paul Keels, once again, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on the Buckeyes Radio Network, which includes right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Mr. Keels, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, my friend. I appreciate you spending the time with us. I've asked you on a number of occasions this season, what can Urban Meyer really take away from many a blowout victory? I haven't had very many opportunities to ask you what can Urban Meyer take away and what can Urban Meyer do about a blowout loss. Your general reaction before we look ahead to a very, very large game in the Big Ten, clearly for the Big East division championship of the conference against Sparty this week. What does Urban Meyer look at and think of his team when he watches that film from Iowa?
I don't know. I really don't, Bob. Number one, that was an impressive performance by Iowa, and, you know, they deserve all the credit in the world. They, you know, great atmosphere for the Hawkeyes. They took advantage of it. They played mistake-free football, and their quarterback had a hell of a game. What they take away from it? Maybe humility. This team isn't as good as everybody thought. There was all the talk about, you know, maybe being in the running for the college football playoffs, maybe being rated here or there. I think that, you know, this game kind of puts a pin in that bubble and, you know, brings everybody back down to earth, obviously, and gets this coaching staff where they're in a position, in a constructive and as decent a manner to say, hey, you know, you're not so good that you can't play better, you can't learn more, you can't do this and you can't do that. So that's just a guess. That's probably the biggest thing they can take from it. And then, you know, try and turn the page and understand that, you know, if they make the same kind of mistakes this weekend, they could be looking at the same kind of result.
Yeah, there's no question about that, especially since Sparty has found what it truly is this season, which, again, we'll get to in a moment. But just to kind of go back, what surprised you the most about the result in Iowa? You mentioned the quarterback play. Nathan Stanley certainly was spectacular. But in general, the way they were able to dominate the Ohio State defense, 244 yards on the ground and 243 in the air? Are you kidding me? You talk about picture-perfect balance. They had it. And I know that Ohio State's defense has not been, I think I got it backwards, 244 in the air and 243 on the ground, but whatever. Ohio State's defense hasn't seen that kind of a balanced attack, or at least allowed that kind of a balanced assault against them all season long and really in a long, long time. So what surprised you more, how weak the defense was against this balanced Iowa offense or how unable JT and the passing game were at going the other direction?
Probably that Ohio State's defense and especially their defensive line couldn't cause Iowa more difficulty. We talked a lot, Bob, about Iowa was playing a true freshman and a redshirt freshman at offensive tackle because of injury. And they had shown some issues that they had had in previous games. So we just kind of thought, as well as Ohio State's defensive line had played, that they'd be able to put a little more heat on Nate Stanley, and they weren't able to do that. The offensive line for Iowa held up, And he was able to get that balance. You know, the tight end matchup really hurt Ohio State, and I think that helped set up Iowa's ability to run the ball the way Akram Wadley and James Butler did. Wadley made a great play catching the ball coming out of the backfield. So probably that Ohio State's defense couldn't have more of an effect. Now, the fact that JT Barrett in the passing game had the difficulty, especially JT coming off of, you know, that incredible fourth quarter he had against Penn State, that was a little surprising too. But you know, to answer your question, probably more that the defense couldn't affect Iowa more than they did.
Yeah, and you know, it was a really staggering thing to see. You just don't see Ohio State get manhandled the way they did on the defensive line like that, and Iowa certainly, you know, took full advantage of that. Is Iowa as good as they looked? I mean, they did surge now from being unranked to being number 20 in the college football playoff rankings. Not that that matters to the, you know, eventual whittling down to the Final Four, but it just shows, you know, from a respect perspective from that committee, how what people really think of them now. Was that just a great day for Iowa against Ohio State? Was Ohio State not what they should be, or is Iowa really as good as they appeared to be?
Probably some of both, and I think the question about Iowa, maybe we'll know a little more since they play at Wisconsin this week and get a better idea of, you know, how they can play against the Badgers and how they can play against Garoto. You know, when the season started, Bob, there were people who thought that if Iowa answered the quarterback question that they had going into the year, that they could be a team that maybe could compete in the West. But I think some of the games they got away from them and some of the games they lost really dulled that a little bit. But, you know, I think Kirk Ferentz deserves an awful lot of credit. He's a guy that, you know, it seems like every second or third year people are rumbling, should he be on the hot seat? Does he still have the job because he has a big buyout? But, you know, I think he and his staff did an outstanding job there. And it'll be interesting to see how they do against Wisconsin. And I think, you know, the other part of that answer will be, how does Ohio State rebound? And especially against a good football team that they have coming in here this weekend.
And that is what it's all about. Enough looking back to that loss. Let's talk about Sparty. I was talking to Jim about this earlier. Not that this was supposed to be a quote-unquote down year for Mark D'Antonio, but it wasn't supposed to be a Big Ten championship year either, I didn't think. I feel like he might be as surprised as anybody to figure out that, you know, if they can run the table here, they might be able to make as much of a case for a two-loss team becoming the first two-loss team to be a playoff team as anybody in the country. Because they will have had, Michigan State will have had already beaten, if it worked out that way, the two number seven ranked teams in the country at the time they played them, Michigan and Penn State. And then Ohio State ranked 13 this Saturday, and then they would have to win the Big Ten championship game over a presumably undefeated Wisconsin team. They pull something like that kind of a runoff, it would be hard to argue that they aren't the team that's in the national championship conversation.
And under that scenario, you're talking about road wins against Michigan and Ohio State. But, you know, at the start of the season, I think everybody expected, or let's even go further back, Bob. Mm-hmm. When Michigan State had the difficulty they had last year, I think most people wanted to kind of realize that's a blip on the radar with what Mark D'Antonio has done in the big picture. And it was reason to think that they would be better this year. How much better? Was the question. I don't know that you could have seen him making this kind of jump. And their loss to Notre Dame, at that time we really didn't know how good Notre Dame was. You know, the loss to Northwestern in overtime kind of left everybody with thinking, well, there they go. But here's the thing that Mark D'Antonio has done, and not just on the field. He's changed the whole perception in Michigan State. They had for the longest time the reputation of being a program that swooned in November. And what Mark D'Antonio has done has had them more often than not contending in November. And that's where they are. And the other amazing thing about what they've done is, and as he mentioned to us on our roundtable show earlier this week, they're a relatively young football team. You know, Brian Lewerke is a sophomore who, you know, missed a good part of the year last year with a broken leg. So they've got a lot of young players that are really helping them be in the position they're in right now.
Paul Keel's joining us, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, who call the games, a game, of course, with Ohio State and Sparty coming up on Saturday. Paul, aside from the what Mark D'Antonio has built, let's talk about just X's and O's or personnel. What is the most impressive thing, the key in terms of Michigan State coming into this game, and what do you suppose is the biggest weakness that Ohio State would have a chance to exploit in trying to win this one?
You know, I think their biggest strength has been the way, at least as of late in the last two games, the way they've thrown the football. And that's, you know, Brian Lewerke has been over 400 yards passing in the last two games. They've not been able to run the football the way Michigan State typically does. And it, at least the way Urban Meyer talked about it today, there have been some games where they've just kind of gotten away from it. So if Ohio State doesn't have to worry so much about them running the football, and you know the passing is what is the highest concern, maybe that gives this pass rush an opportunity, maybe with help from linebackers and defensive backs, to put some pressure on Brian Lewerke and force turnovers. You know, another Michigan State strength is their defense. Regardless of who the players are, it's so uniform. And I think a lot of that is because of Mark D'Antonio's defensive background. And, you know, these are guys that have been able to do what they did against Saquon Barkley, do what they did against Michigan, that despite whatever people think might be their offensive concerns. So, you know, those are the kind of things that, that Michigan State, the threats they present. And if they're not really consistently running the ball, then maybe that's where Ohio State's defense has an opportunity to get after things.
You know, you talk about their ability to throw it, and Lewerke with a couple of 400-yard passing games, including, you know, one against Penn State, which is pretty impressive. And that's that really is a bad combination, because Ohio State's secondary has been, and I want to say this with respect, but when I say shredded, in the two losses, I mean, we talked about Nathan Stanley, how well he played. You talk about Baker Mayfield, quite obviously, in the second week of the season, how well he did against Ohio State secondary. But even in some of the wins, there were a lot of big numbers put up by opposing quarterbacks, and it's no, you know, there's no mystery there. The secondary has not played up to snuff. Now, if that is just on personnel back there, okay. Or is that a combination of they're not getting enough pressure on quarterbacks and you can't cover guys for 7 to 8 seconds? How does that marriage work here? What does Urban Meyer do defensively to slow down a hot passer like Lewerke, given all of those struggles they've had in that department?
Well, I think they like the play they're getting out of the safeties. It's the corners where maybe the concern is. And, you know, part of their recycling, if you will, is the fact that, and we talked about it, Bob, before the season started, look at the people they lost to the NFL and how they had to replace them. And you probably shouldn't be talking about that this late into the season, but I think that certainly Damon Webb and Jordan Fuller are stronger links at safeties than the other guys consistently have been at the cornerback position. And yeah, even in some of the lopsided wins, there have been a few sloppy plays that have gone out the door. But also think about what Iowa did, and it was how they hurt Ohio State with two different tight ends. And some of that falls kind of on the linebackers as well, being able to take care of it. And Saturday wasn't a good day for the linebackers, especially Jerome Baker, who had some troubles with their tight end. So, you know, I think a lot of it is just kind of what particular opponent, what they're going to feature. And Iowa and Oklahoma featured using the tight ends. And that's a concern because Michigan State can, and they have done it in the past against Ohio State.
Paul, is there a home field advantage here for the Buckeyes?
It's crazy you mention that, because I just saw maybe the same thing you saw. The home team hasn't won in this series since 2007.
Exactly. 16 times the road team has won when they've played in the, you know, in one of their home stadiums, the exclusion being the Big Ten Championship game in 2013. That's a crazy stat, isn't it?
It is. And now consider that before they were in the same division, they didn't always play every year. They rotated out quite a bit. And in the midst of that, Ohio State has 2 1-point wins by the same identical score in East Lansing. You know, the game here in 2015 that came down to a last-second field goal for Michigan State. So I think you can look at three games really that very easily could have gone the other way. And, you know, I think also think about that 2014 game in East Lansing. JT Barrett, if I'm remembering correctly, he threw three touchdown passes and ran for two, and that was a game that kind of got Ohio State back into a better position in the playoff poll, to where they were able to make that flourish to get into the first year of the playoffs. So it's, you know, and a lot of it, Bob, if you look at Michigan State's roster, and this isn't new, they've recruited a lot of kids out of Ohio, you know, and a lot of them out of Columbus too. So they've, you know, I know they've always rated Toledo very well, just like Michigan has, sure. But there's a lot of Ohioans on that roster, a lot of them from my hometown in Cincinnati. So I think that has a lot to do with it, but also, you know, quite honestly, it's the coaching. You know, you think about what Urban Meyer has done with, you know, last Saturday was just his second Big Ten road loss. Mark D'Antonio has been able to, you know, beating Michigan in Ann Arbor, something that he's had success with Michigan State doing. Michigan State will be going for a third straight win in Ohio Stadium this coming Saturday. So, I think it just has to kind of filter down to how good a job these coaches have done preparing their teams to go on the road and win in tough places.
Last time somebody did that, three straight wins at the Horseshoe, it was Wisconsin back from 99 to 04, just to throw that out there. So that's a...
And one of those was a game that Ron Dayne pretty much sealed up the Heisman Trophy with four touchdowns.
Right.
And And if I remember, Bob, I think Wisconsin came from 17 down in that game to win.
Wow. That's you know what? If anybody would have that kind of recall, it would be you.
I might be wrong. And another one, I think they started a freshman quarterback and won.
Paul, that's a great point, too. Paul, real quick, because you mentioned JT's 3 touchdown passing and 2 running performance in that game in 14. JT, is he gun-shy at all on Saturday after the 4 picks, and not only after throwing them against Iowa, but Urban saying, I think he forced it a little bit, particularly there at the end of the half. He talked about how JT forced some things. I mean, an experienced guy like JT, I'm sure he knows how to handle that kind of criticism, but I'm wondering if that makes him think, can't force it, if it makes him a little gun-shy on making throws that he might ordinarily want to make.
I would hope not, but I know he mentioned earlier in the week he's got to look maybe for some secondary and check down things maybe a little quicker than he did Saturday.
Okay, and that's fair enough. And last thing, Jim Cushlin wants to ask you about a different kind of ball, Jimmy.
Yeah, obviously it's understandable to get lost in what's still going on the football field, but for those who aren't aware, college basketball pretty much opens up for the whole bunch of teams in the nation tomorrow. That includes the Buckeyes. Got a home game against Robert Morris on Friday, home game against, I think it's Radford on Sunday. New coach this year, kind of a transition for the program. Basically, the real quick, simple question here, Paul, is what should fans be expecting from the Buckeyes on the basketball court this year?
Well, I think, you know, what Chris Holtman Jim has done is tried to simplify things. He mentioned prior to Sunday's exhibition game that they really just had 3 offensive sets that they put in, and he's more interested in seeing how they play rather than putting in plays. Hopefully what we'll see is a group, because you've got a nice mix of veterans and youth and a healthy Kata Batesy out back and Jay Sean Tate. The thing to watch for fans, Jim, is going to be there's a lack of depth at point guard. You've got C.J. Jackson, who finished well at the end of last year, Andrew Dockich, a graduate transfer from Michigan, and then you may see Jay Sean Tate handling the point guard position at various times. So that's not an ideal position, but it's still going to be a work in progress for this group.
And we look forward to talking to you all throughout basketball season as well about the Buckeye Hoopsters, Paul Keels. But we are certainly looking forward to hearing you call this huge, huge Big Ten East game between the Buckeyes and the Spartans coming up on Saturday. Paul, thanks so much for your visit today. As always, we look forward to catching up again soon.
My pleasure, Bob and Jim. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here. Hey, don't forget, wherever you're going to watch that game, if it's not in the stadium, if you're not going to Columbus to sit in the shoe, why don't you go sit at Buffalo Wild Wings? That's right. And while you're there, you can earn loyalty points at B-Dubs with Blazin' Rewards. And if you hurry, you can catch those points by eating limited-time items like the Cali Chicken Sandwich, the Fiesta Pork Tacos, Specialty 35th Weck Sandwich, and more. Plus, like a quarterback's favorite receiver, B-Dubs has the perfect wing sauce pairing for their Blue Moon Belgian white beer. It's the Blue Moon Barbecue. Get that on your wings with that beer. Oh, phenomenal. It's available for a limited time only while supplies last, and only at Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports. Please drink responsibly. What a tremendous weekend of college football this is going to be, Cush. And that Ohio State-Michigan State game might be, you know, the most interesting game for Ohio State fans, but it's not even the biggest game of the weekend for top 25 teams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This is going to be one of those weekends where we might see some changes just by default in the polls coming up and in the playoff rankings. And we're going to start getting some answers to some of those things we were postulating about at the end of the first hour with the chaos and how that might or might not happen.
Biggest one of the weekend for me is going to be, well, there's 2 big ones. It's going to be Georgia and Auburn, that yes. SEC tilt, but also Catholics and convicts. And I know that's not fair to the current Miami players to call them convicts. It's just the history of Notre Dame versus Miami. When they make a 30-for-30 out of it, it's going to stick a while, even about 3 decades later. So it is the Irish and the Hurricanes of Coral Gables. One is 3, the other is 7. Winner is just controlling their destiny to go on to the college football playoff.
Doubt.
Loser is indeed going to be done. In that regard. Hey, speaking of college football, as you know, we always talk with our local MAC coaches during the week. We talked with Jason Candel yesterday, right before his Rockets fell to defeat at OU in Athens. And coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Mike Jinks, the head coach of the Bowling Green State University Falcons. They lost on Tuesday to Buffalo. It's been a tough season, make no mistake about it. They lost to Buffalo 38-28. And we're going to talk about the Battle of I-75 as that comes up next Wednesday. And don't forget, I've got a pair of tickets for that game I will be giving away during tomorrow's show in the 3 o'clock hour. So if you want to go to the Deut on Wednesday the 15th to see UT and BG in the Battle of I-75. We'll do it for you tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. And on the way into Mike Jinks now, Kush, what do you say we do something sweet for our sweet listeners? A $50 gift certificate is our sweet deal of the week to Chomp Burger on Main Street in Adrian, Michigan. Log on to 1065theticket.com in the morning at 9 a.m. and you'll get a $50 gift certificate for just $25. Half price. That's the sweet deal. But here's an even sweeter deal. Free to caller number 7 right now. $50 gift certificate to Chomp Burger on Main Street in Adrian, Michigan. Caller 7. Dial 866-240-1065 right now and we'll set you up with that $50 gift certificate. All right, bottom of the hour, local sports center coming your way. And on the other side of that, Mike Jinks, head coach of the Falcons, talks with our man Kush right here on the ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kushlin here as we close out a Thursday edition of the show. Continuing our college football talk. Talked a little Buckeyes with Paul Keels last segment. Now it's time to talk the Bowling Green Falcons. Fell at Buffalo the other night, 38-28. A couple of career nights for a couple of the Buffalo Bulls. And to help us break it all down and get you set for Bowling Green's next game, it's the Battle of I-75 coming up this coming Wednesday, the 15th at the Doit against Toledo. And to break it all down, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, joining us on the program. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Good. Always good to be here.
Oh, no, it's always great to talk with you, Coach. I love our little chats we have every week. Well, 38-28 back on Tuesday at Buffalo. You got some good outings from some of your guys, but as I just kind of teased, a couple of career days for a couple of those guys on that Buffalo side, not to mention that it was 21-7 after a quarter, though to your kids' credit, kept fighting back, kept staying in this ball game.
As we've done all year long, the kids battled back. We got it 31-28 with about 10 to go in the fourth, and then they hit another big play. But just didn't have – got in the shootout and really didn't have enough bullets Tuesday night. And you touched on it, Jim. You know, the two turnovers early in the first quarter, you know, it's kind of what got us behind the eight ball, 21-7. And really just – we mounted a 99-yard drive to end the second quarter to make it 21-14. Came out with a little bit of momentum. You know, they scored right away 28-14. We scored 21-28. Then they kicked the field goal, and we scored again 28-31. So as we've done all year, showed a little bit of life in the second half and making some adjustments and things. They really just didn't have enough. We couldn't stop them. They hit the big play all night long. You know, credit, hats off to the quarterback and the receivers. They made the plays, and we weren't able to get stopped.
Yeah, they certainly did on this night. In that first quarter especially, you mentioned a couple turnovers. Would you say that was the biggest catalyst to going down 21-7 after one?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and in those times, you got to bow your neck, and you got to get some stops. But, you know, from a pure execution standpoint, you can't put the defense in situations like that, short fields and things of that nature. It's tough. You know, and we did it, and, you know, luckily we were able to respond a little bit from the offensive standpoint. But in this conference and in this league, if you're turning the ball over and you're losing the turnover battle, it's going to be tough to win any week.
That is so very, very true, Coach. We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons. Falcons fell to 2-8 overall on the season, 38-28, the final back on Tuesday against Buffalo. One positive, though, definitely I would say from that offensive standpoint, not only were you guys able to keep fighting back, but the freshman Jarrett Dagey, what a great game for him, I thought. 28-43, 294, three touchdowns, no interceptions, so he was able to at least keep you in the game from that offensive standpoint. Talk to me about his effort in this one.
Yeah, he was that magic word, efficient. You know, he gave us a chance. You know, and again, if you don't turn the ball over early, and again, those were fumbles, not interceptions, then that last drive of the game, we're going down to tie it or to win it. So as long as he continues to play like that, he gives us a shot each and every week.
Yeah, he certainly does. An outstanding day for him on this one. Talk to me about overall both sides of the ball, your kids in this one. I mean, I feel like a broken record almost asking you this, Coach, but to be able to stay in it, a lot of teams that could have just tucked tail and said, oh, that's the end of it, when you turn the ball over, go down by a couple of scores in the first quarter. But as we mentioned, you guys hung around. It was a three-point game, actually, as you mentioned, in that fourth quarter. Talk to me about the kids overall as they stayed fighting, because that's something we're at least happy to see in these situations.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Jim, it's a resilient group. They're going to continue to play hard. They played hard for us since we've gotten here as a staff. You know, we just got to get out of our own way, and when we do that, we show that we're, you know, a pretty fun football team to watch. Hence last week, you know, we played mistake-free football, and you know, we're able to really dominate a Kent team that's been playing everybody close. So, you know, there are no quick fixes. You know, it's something that we've got to get done. You know, we can continue to harp on it on just little things and how important each and every snap is. The only other solution after that is you got to give different guys opportunities, you know, and so we've talked about that as a football family as well, you know, because we can't continue to make the same mistakes. We can't allow the same guys to keep continuing to fumble over and over again. You just can't do that. It's not fair to the unit. So we'll keep working. We'll keep recruiting and, you know, We'll be right back out there tomorrow morning.
On that kind of note, Coach, are there any possible lineup changes you're thinking about in relation to some of those mistakes at this point, or is that still on a wait-and-see approach as we get into next week?
That's on a wait-and-see approach as we get into the next week. I think we got some guys up and ready that are increasing some reps so that guys are prepared to play, and you'll see more guys rolling in there and getting their opportunities at all of our skill position spots, running back, receivers, so what. The group that I want to make sure that we shed some light on in last week's performance was the offensive line unit. If there wasn't one positive, we were down four starters on our offensive line, and we had three guys really go in and make their first starts. And it was tough sledding a little bit early on, but they battled and competed their tails off and really, again, gave us a chance in that game. So Caleb Bright and John Kurtz and Tim Blair, two of them being freshmen, did a heck of a job for us.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Coach, and that's always a nice tip of the cap thing right there, and we've kind of talked about that at times when these injuries have come up. So, yeah, it's always, in theory, on paper, not a good sign when you're starting four different linemen due to injuries, but they were able to come through for the most part, and that's always a good thing to see. And you were mentioning what's up next as we were trying to figure out what's going on there. Well, up next is Throw the Records Out. It's Rivalry Week, and by the way, just announced the time for next Wednesday's Battle of I-75, Falcons Rockets from the Deut. That's an 8:00 kickoff, which means 7:00 coverage time over at actually here on 106.5 The Ticket. We'll be able to carry Rockets and Falcons right here on 106.5 instead of 100.7 coming up on Wednesday. And your first coach, your thoughts on the rivalry in general?
Really didn't, had no idea what I was walking into last year, and you know, been a part of a lot of big ball games in a lot of neat venues, and I tell you what, last year's environment, I mean, it rivals, I mean, anyone that I've ever been in. I mean, the crowd was into it on each and every play. It was such an awesome environment. It was a great day to play. It was a beautiful Saturday, you know, late afternoon, evening. So if I didn't understand it by the time that thing kicked off, I got what was going on. So excited to be a part of it, and you know, got a great relationship with Coach Candle, and they do a great job, and you know, and just look forward to competing against the best.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And they're going to be a little salty, I have a feeling, Coach, as they fell yesterday 38-10 in a battle of division leaders. So that's going to add extra emphasis on from their standpoint. But then again, from you guys, this precedes your tenure here as coach. It's not been it's been more of a one-sided rivalry in favor of the Rockets in recent years. So all of that's coming to a head. How nice would it be to be able to break this skid against Toledo at the Deut this year, if you're able to do that?
It would be huge. It'd be awesome for our fan base. It'd be awesome for our student athletes. You know, it'd be awesome for our program and recruiting and everything of that nature, especially on the national stage, you know, being in a maxing game this year as opposed to last year. So it's a big ball game, and there's a lot riding on it. I mean, it's pride on our end, and you know, I tell you, we got a group of prideful men that will go out and play as a family, and when you play like that, you can throw the records out because you're right. You can be tough to handle. And on their end, you know, they're in a tie right now in NIU, you know, and if we're able to get the victory, you know, it could keep get them not allow them to go to the MAC championship game. So it'll be a highly contested affair.
Yeah, no doubt about it. These matchups obviously usually are. That's why the cliche is always throw the records out when you have a rivalry game like this. Usually this is the part, Coach, where I ask you, what does so-and-so need to do, and what are you going to do to stop it? But when it comes to the Rockets, they offensively, they're just simply one of the best. They can do a ton from the passing game with Logan Woodside, and he's on like seemingly every watch list involving quarterbacks. They got an outstanding running game. Is that from a defensive standpoint in this one, Coach, is this a pick your poison kind of game?
Hey, Jim, you hit it right on the head. You know, you can't stop everything. We've got to look at it, and then again, it's about us. What are we best built to stop? Okay, and let's at least take that away. You know what I mean? And then you, you know, we manage the game from offensive and special team standpoint. So you're right; they've got skill all over the football field. You know, we got to put ourselves in good situations and not be complicated or try to do too much. And more than anything else, just fly around. Fly around and play the game the right way is what I'm asking the kids to do come Wednesday night.
Is there anything offensively you guys might be able to do against them defensively? And honestly, looking at from my random point of view, is this could be a good game for Claire in the running game because Toledo has had a knack for this year at times for getting smashed around in the running game. It happened against Ohio where they gave up almost 400 yards on the ground the other day. Is that something you feel you can take advantage of offensively?
I don't know if we're in any stage to do any smashing of anything. You know, to be honest with you, what we're going to do what they allow us to do. If the box light, we're going to run it, and if it's full, we're going to throw it. That's what we've done all year long. I think that we've had a great plan and have executed it well, and we've shown that we've got the athletes that are more than capable of taking advantage of their opportunities. So we don't need to do anything other than be ourselves from offensive standpoint, and we should be okay.
It is the Toledo Rockets and the Bowling Green Falcons. Battle of I-75 coming up this Wednesday, the 15th, at the Doit. Just announced, by the way, today. Again, the kickoff time for that will be an 8 o'clock Maction, of course, game. That means 7 o'clock pregame time. We'll have it for you right here on 106.5 The Ticket next Wednesday. Coach, best of luck out there. Rivalry games are always fun. I hope the Doit is packed because it's going to be a darn entertaining football game one way or the other.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for all you do, man. You do a great job.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the time with you. Head Coach Mike Chicks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the Extravaganza to close out this Thursday. And, yeah, Toledo, Bowling Green, what more can you say? I know both teams are in vastly different spots and different directions at this moment, and there's a lot of things that can happen in a rivalry game. As you mentioned, we saw it last year where we had a similar situation for both teams, yet that was a back-and-forth, high-scoring, entertaining football game that ended up going the Rockets' way at the Glass Bowl. As the streak continues, the Rockets have won a few in a row, let's put it that way, in this rivalry. It's been very one-sided the last 5 years or so in favor of the Toledo Rockets, but you just never know how it's going to happen. And I really do think, offensively, even though Coach said, well, we're not really in a position to bust anything, but I think there might be a slight advantage Falcons wise when they have the football. If they're able to whoever's on that offensive line, you're a coach against Buffalo, they had to go with four of the backups due to injuries, but that's all that really is kind of here and there, because you're at the stage of a football season where a lot of guys are going to be hurt at all sorts of places. I know there's injuries on the Rockets and a couple of them on their offensive line too, so nobody's immune to it at this point. But just think of what happened at Toledo last night when they gave up nearly 400 yards rushing to the Ohio Bobcats in that battle of division leaders. That tells me, because that's not the first time that something like that has happened. There have been a couple other games this year where opponent running games have just kind of smash the Rockets front seven. So that actually tells me there might be something there if they can get the push up front. And then, you know, on the other side of the ball from Bowling Green defensive standpoint, and Coach kind of agreed with this, as you heard, it's kind of a well, pick your poison. Either you let Logan Woodside, who's on all those quarterback watch lists and now the all-time pass passing leader in Rockets history, surpassing 2 weeks ago the legend himself, as it were, Bruce Gronkowski. So you know what they could do, the Rockets, through the air. And then, of course, with Terry Swanson and some of the rest, they have an outstanding running game as well. So it really is a pick your kind of poison. It means flying around, as Coach Jinx said there, on the defensive side of the ball, keeping your head on that proverbial swivel, and just trying to make some plays when you can make plays and do what you can to not get burned by the big plays, something else the Rockets are very, very capable of. But, you know, in a twisted way, a Bowling Green win in this one would not only reset the rivalry, because they always say you can't really have a rivalry if one side is beating up the other, which sadly at this moment in time, that's the case. The Rockets have been winning much more recently in this rivalry than the Falcons, but, you know, if you're the Falcons, a win here would not only at least have you have a smile on your face for this football season, the record might be bad, but at least we beat Toledo. But on the flip side, because the Rockets now have suffered a conference loss, they're out of Group of Five. They're not going to get a Group of Five type of bid from the playoff committee or anything, but they still have the inside track for a West Division title. They're tied right now with Northern Illinois, are the Rockets. So, and that means they have the tiebreaker, because the Rockets beat Northern Illinois last week. So a Falcons beating the Rockets would probably take them out of the running for the West Division title and a trip to a MAC title game. That's a play. You know, the Falcons have been to a couple MAC title games very, very recently, including just 3 years ago. Feels like eons ago, the way the Bowling Green program has been since then, unfortunately. But it was just 3 years ago Bowling Green was in a MAC title game. Rockets haven't been there since 04. It's been 13 years, because they keep running into the Northern Illinois or somebody like that, or last year Western Michigan roadblocking them from a MAC title game. So they got a lot to play for still, do the Toledo Rockets, but for the Bowling Green Falcons, you still have a lot to play for as well. You want to end the skid against a rival, and in doing so would not only say, hey, we won the last game of the rivalry, that's so awesome, but it would probably take Toledo out of the running for a MAC West title. Either way, it's going to be entertaining, as the Battle of I-75 always is, next Wednesday at the Deut. And again, just announced today, 8 o'clock the kickoff time, next Wednesday the 15th for the Battle of I-75. That means a 7 o'clock coverage time. And we'll finally, I like to try to do this if I can during the weekday MACtion games. This one's going to be my first opportunity to do so, as this game, Rockets-Falcons, will be right here on 106.5 the Ticket. In fact, that lineup Wednesday, there'll be Extravaganza, Drive Time, Face Off, the Hockey Show First Edition, and then Toledo Bowling Green. So next Wednesday will be a darn entertaining day here on the airwaves. And as Toledo and Bowling Green getting set for another episode in the rivalry. And that's going to do it for this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Stick around. I'm in for Mike Miller coming up on Drive Time. We're going to talk more about that Rockets loss, what it means. Pistons getting a big win. We're also going to talk some Cavs with Chris Manning of FearOfTheSword.com at about, let's call it 5:35, 5:40 or so, as the Cavs take on the Houston Rockets. Tonight I've been saying Rockets a lot, obviously, in the last couple of minutes. So I want to make sure that's Houston, not Toledo. And then some football here on the areas. Here on the Ticket, some college football, North Carolina at Pitt, an ACC game, 7 o'clock coverage time right here on the Ticket. And then courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, Thursday night football to get your week 10 underway. It's Seattle at Arizona, 8 o'clock over on Talk Radio 100.7. So lots of fun football stuff coming up on the airwaves tonight. And stick around though after this top of the hour timeout as we shift gears to Drive Time. Yours truly, in for Mike Miller, coming at you next. Stick around for that.